Okay, now we'll have our speaker, Suzanne, who will now share her experience, strength, or her experience for 15 minutes on step one, alcoholism is cunning and baffling. Your share, thanks for letting us record, and thank you, it's all yours.
Thank you for inviting me. My name is Suzanne. I am an alcoholic. I am a chaos creator, and I'm probably lots of other things. It's really an honor to be doing service. And I don't know why I'm always more nervous doing Zoom service than in-person service. I don't know why that is, but I'm super nervous. This Danielle had texted me, a friend who invited me to speak today, about topic. And as soon as I thought about it, it popped into my head that alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And, you know, I'm a thinker, right? Aren't we all? And I started to think about that nature of and the first thing I want to say is that the fact that it came to me without thought tells me that it's something I'm supposed to share with you today. And I get those messages from being connected to something greater than me as a result of doing the work in the big book. So I started to think, because I do have a brain, about that power, the baffling, you know, the baffling nature of alcoholism. And my experience is that I essentially knew something was wrong with me for as long as I was a kid, really, and I knew I wasn't quite right, you know, and it started with drugs and alcohol. The way that I acted as a result of wanting to do drugs and alcohol, wanting to get away with it, how I was going to get it, you know, the lying, the manipulating, like I had abandoned the things that were like innately important to me, such as honesty, for example. And, you know, this progressed throughout, you know, my years of drinking and using. But I knew that something was wrong, I think mostly because of the guilt and shame I had as a user. And early in my 20s, I sought out help. And that help, you know, I went to Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Actually, at my very first meeting, someone gave me a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Inside the front cover, he wrote to me, "Dear Suzanne, this book will solve all your problems." And I remember thinking he was crazy. But I did go home and read the first chapter. It wasn't even the first chapter. It was like the pre-chapter, the doctor's opinion. And I kind of had a double reaction, contrary to one. I was glad and mad at the same time that this book had been giving me language so I could better understand what I was feeling and living. At the same time, I was really angry because it kind of said that I was an alcoholic, you know, and obviously like at that stage of my life, it's baffling. Alcoholism is baffling. So, I mean, I like to think I understand it today. I probably understand it better than a lot of people. However, it still baffles me. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about and what my experience has been like. So I did go through, I sought out lots of other means to fix myself in my 20s and into my early 30s. I did things like therapy, retreats, spiritual, you know, retreats. I did like a lot of, you know, I was going to, you know, grab a guy, you know, he was going to fix my problem. A new job was going to fix my problem. I tried all these different things, including control and manipulation of the drugs and alcohol that I did to manage it in a way that I could still use and function. And that was my experience with life. And I really didn't know how to not be that. You know, I mean, I couldn't live with it and I couldn't live without it. And I didn't know how to live. Truly, like life was too difficult for me. I think about what it says in the first step in the big book. While we're still in the first step, it says that the alcoholic's problems become pile up on themselves and become astonishingly difficult to solve. And I felt like that was my experience going to the grocery store. You know, it's like I just couldn't do it. I don't know. I like would compare my insides to other people's outsides, and I would think everybody had their shit together. And here I was, like, really having a difficult go at it, you know, of life. So I always the best thing that could have happened to me was that that I had this feeling, this nagging feeling that like that it wasn't supposed to be like this. Like it was like a lack of symbiosis. It was a lack of like harmony within me, you know, like I hear people describe their angel and demon, you know, and I just was always at war with myself, how I was living and trying to get over it somehow. Right. And of course it made my life very unmanageable, which enabled me to then take measures, drastic measures to, seek help. So I suppose what happened to me was, I mean, I was definitely a mess, but like when I thought about unmanageability initially, you know, I remember my first good big book sponsor said to me, this is when I got sober. She said to me, you know, let's talk about your unmanageability. And I was like, oh, my life is manageable. Like I've got it together, you know, like my mom showered, my house is clean, my children are clean, you know? And I thought that's like, and I had it, well, I was unemployable at that time, but I had jobs, you know, and my husband certainly had a job. His job was not only to make the money and to pay the bills, but also to take care of me, which he was doing a very good job of keeping me out of, you know, those big scrapes. So, you know, once I put it on paper and started asking myself the questions, you know, like, you know, trying to understand like that my thinking was actually what was wrong. You know what I mean? Like I had unmanageability in my life based on the way that I thought. So it wasn't really about the drugs or the drink. It was really about the way that I thought. And I had this amazing experience with my sponsor, went through the big book, went through the 12 steps. I really identified as a real alcoholic. I had all the symptoms. I was gung-ho, desperate as the dying can be, have a spiritual awakening as a result of the 12 steps, because it is a promise of step 12. And if you haven't had a spiritual awakening as a result of the 12 steps, then something's missing and you need to go deeper. You know, that's been my experience. And so here I am, you know, I was like 33 or 34 years old. I was free. I felt fantastic. I was of service. I was useful. I started helping other people and I was on fire. Right. And I remember thinking and saying to my sponsor, like, I don't understand how I could ever go back to thinking the way that I used to think. Right. And so, you know, I mean, I spent so much time trying to figure it out, but it doesn't even matter. The point is that after 6 years of living this amazing solution life, you know, working those steps, like really working a solution, going to really great meetings and like participating in life. And I really had a great experience being sober. I friggin' drank. Right. So I spent a lot of time like, you know, in misery over that. Like, how the hell did this happen again? Like, how did I start thinking? Because it doesn't start with the picking up of the drink. And I spent a lot of time trying to figure it out. So fast forward 2.5 years of hell, not being able to actually get sober again. Still going to meetings, still working with the sponsors, understanding what the answer is, you know, having a connection with a higher power, and working this program is the solution, a sufficient solution, and not being able to quite grasp it, you know, that was really worse than I think, drinking. But anyway, I get sober again. Same thing, like threw myself into the program, went through the 12 steps, went through the big book. Like at this point, like I've been going to AA for like forever. Like I always went all those other times where I was trying to do it my way. I always went to program. And let me tell you, by now I like had a PhD in the goddamn big book, you know, like I freaking could recite any page, anywhere, anything, but I had only had this experience with it. That first time where I was able to utilize the language that's in the book and truly understand it. But still, this baffling feature of alcoholism, that slowly over time, I will start to believe the lies in my head. You know, this voice, it will return. We have a daily reprieve is what it talks about, a daily reprieve contingent upon our spiritual maintenance. And it's like, I see how it sneaks in. And it's not as much as like, I need to get to a meeting. Like, it's like telling me something. Now, I didn't know this at the time. I'm sober 5 years or something like that. And I've got this crazy happening in my life. You know, granted, my husband was having a midlife crisis, and so he became something I was completely fixated on and completely focused on. And I just, it was about control and trying to manipulate the situation so I could have the outcome that I wanted, even though I would tell you, I believe in God, like, and I trust God, like, and my whole life is revolving around this higher power that I'm working this program and blah, blah, blah. So I was kind of going nuts. Like, I mean, I was really, really dying. I felt very sick and I was sober, you know, and this had never happened to me before because, like, in the past, I didn't have the experience so much of, like, when something was bad, really bad, I would think about a drink or a drug and it seemed like a viable option, you know. And now having lived through that hell of 2.5 years of trying to get sober again, I had recoiled from that thought like a hot flame as a promise to me in the 10th step. And that was my experience. And I couldn't even go there. Like, as soon as it popped into my head, because it's going to, I'm an alcoholic, it comes, it just comes. As soon as it was there, I was like, oh God, no. Like, that is just not the road. I've exhausted that possibility. I had nothing else. I had nothing else. You know, like, I had used up everything I used to use to make myself, to fill the void that God can only fill, and try to escape what I was feeling, which was, I didn't like what God's got had in store for me. I was not accepting life on life's terms. And I was angry. I was resentful. I was upset. Like, I was a sick alcoholic. No drink, you know? And so I called a bunch of people that I know and had a done BBA style work. And actually I called one person and then that person gave me another person and so on and so forth. And after talking to a bunch of people, someone's like, oh girl, you need chaos creating. You got a lot of chaos in your life. And we read through these things, like this list of things that, these list of like the things that we do to create chaos. And I had no idea that I always was the one in front of the ball. I was always the one starting the drama. I was always running late. I was, you know, I said yes when I meant no. I was still taking on more than I could handle. I didn't take care of myself physically, like every freaking thing on that list I had. And then I had a few more, which I added in the beginning. And I think the reason I bring it up is because, like, I was completely baffled by how sick I had gotten, because when I went through the big book again, really focused on chaos creating, adrenaline, really it was about adrenaline for me. And I was using, like, my internal drugstore, like I would use any other drug, you know, and I was doing it as a means to escape my current situation. Right. I mean, so am I an addict still? Yes. Yes. I was currently an addict at that time. And it was really baffling to me that once I understood it, okay, now I can stop it. Now I got it because I understand what I'm doing. But then I found myself creating chaos all the time. It was just baffling to me. So one step further with baffling, I go through this work. It's amazing. Like, I figure out that I have this idea in my head. You know, it's like some lie. I don't even know whose idea it was. Someone I picked up along the way. I have this idea in my head. Like, for example, divorce equals failure. And I'm so afraid that of failure that my character defects come out in ego and protect that fear like nobody's business, and I'm charging my way through life and creating a big mess everywhere I go. And I thought, okay, well, now I see it and I can stop it. Turns out I'm powerless against that too. And it's, you know, like, to me, that it's like, it is baffling. It's baffling that I could be powerless against my own behavior. And so the nature of alcoholism in its many faces, you know, and I don't know if you guys can see, probably can't, I have these octopuses everywhere because I like to talk about alcoholism as in like an octopus, right? My disease has all these arms and it's reaching, you know, drugs, alcohol, people, shopping, power, money, job, house, whatever, material things, relationship. It is reaching and reaching and reaching for all these different things to fill this God-sized hole that I have, you know, and that God sized hole can be filled up like bursting with love today. And then guess what? Tomorrow I might like have a little crack in that thing. And if I don't do all of this in a thorough and efficient way, every suggestion, you know, sorry, every friggin' one. And oh God, I'm hearing like, you still have amends. You still, that's my thought. Like, you still have amends to do. Like, I have to do all of this stuff all of the time. And it takes up a lot of time and effort, you know, and I'm happy about it. I'm happy that I can do it, but it took me a long time to accept it. It took me a long time to realize that it was that constant vigilance and that it's never going to go away. And that's that baffling feature. Because over time, if I like rest up just a little bit, like it says in our book, rest up on our laurels, you know, we have to be really careful, because then all of a sudden this ideal, some obsessive thought, some thought will come into my head and I will take it for a ride if I'm not careful. So recently, I mean, not that long ago, I heard this woman share, and she said the most sober person in the room, and she was talking about, this is like a BBA meeting, so it was like across the board sober, is the person who can stop that thought quickest. You know, it's like, I have to really be vigilant, you know, in my 10th step, I have to be watching my thinking. And then as soon as that thought comes, ask for help. Because if I take that thought for a ride or a walk or a run or whatever, that thought is going to, it's going to, that's the baffling feature. I will think myself into chaos. I will think myself into unhealthy behavior. I will think myself into a drink or a drug. And it's always going to be that way. And so in step one, it is, I mean, it's, I couldn't have possibly fathomed this all those years ago, but I really, really need to smash home the idea that I am not like other people. You know, and that these features of alcoholism are I'm shot through with them, you know, and I have to really respect it. So my experience and my journey has taught me to respect it. And yet I can still, you know, blow off an Al-Anon meeting or blow, you know, I could still find myself doing those things. So anyway, I'm very grateful that I'm sure I'm just about out of time. I think that I don't know why God wanted me to speak about baffling, but the truth is I am baffled by it, and I'm not baffled by much, you know, and it really pissed me off that I'm baffled by something, because I like to think myself like a smart person who doesn't get easily baffled, but it is definitely cunning. It sneaks right back in there. It is definitely way more powerful than me and anybody really I know. And it is baffling. It is really baffling. So don't think you know. Don't think you got it, because we just never do. Just take it a day at a time and hope that God can guide me. I think my most recent way I handle my alcoholism is this. And it has been working really well for me. It's so simple. Anytime something happens and I hear myself saying, I don't want to do that, or I don't want to think that, or whatever, I say the next thought is, do the next right thing. You know, so if somebody's calling me and I don't want to answer the phone, I just pick it up because it's the next right thing. And I've been doing that. It's so simple and it's so useful and it so works. Like, I want to say no to certain things because I just don't want to do it because I'm selfish. And then I'm like, nope, better say yes. It's the next right thing. Sometimes I say no because it is the next right thing, but you know, it's a finesse, I suppose. Thank you all for having me. I hope I said something that pissed you off, so you have an opportunity to get closer to God.
Thank you, Suzanne. I really appreciate that. I'm going to stop the recording now.